Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Hello and welcome to SCOTUScast. I'm your host, Justin Troer, on behalf of the Faculty Division of the Federalist Society. We're here today to discuss Coinbase Incorporated v. Bielski, which was argued before the court on March 21st. It's my honor to introduce our guest today, Dr. Tamar Michel. Dr. Michel is an associate professor of law at the University of Alberta. Her main research areas are domestic and international arbitration. She practiced international commercial arbitration in a law firm in Vancouver and as deputy counsel at the International Court of Arbitration of the ICC in Paris. She was recently a scholar in residence with WilmerHale's International Arbitration Group in London. She has authored over 50 publications, many of them about U.S. arbitration law. Her work has been cited by the Supreme Court of Israel, the Supreme Court of Canada, and the Delaware Court of Chancery. And we're very happy to have her on SCOTUScast today to talk about Coinbase.
Thank you for having me.
So to start off, I think it would probably make sense to talk a little bit about the background of the case, the facts, how we got to the Supreme Court, and kind of broadly why our audience should care about this case.
Sure. So Coinbase is a cryptocurrency exchange. And it was sued by two of its customers in two separate proceedings in federal district courts in California. The first case involved a sweepstakes competition that was advertised by Coinbase. And it was alleged that the competition was an unlawful lottery under California laws. The second case involved a scam that resulted in the plaintiff losing thousands of dollars from his Coinbase account. Now, what's important for our purposes is not so much the party's arguments on the merits, but that in both cases, Coinbase responded to the claims by moving to compel them to arbitration. And Coinbase relied in these motions on an arbitration clause that was contained in its terms of use and on the Federal Arbitration Act, which is typically referred to as the FAA. And the FAA requires courts to compel arbitration where a valid arbitration agreement exists between the parties. But in these two cases, both district courts actually denied Coinbase's motions to compel arbitration. In the first case, the district court found that Coinbase's user agreement, which contained the arbitration clause, was actually superseded by Coinbase's subsequent sweepstakes rules. And those rules contained an exclusive forum selection clause that designated California courts as the forum to resolve disputes. And it did not contain any arbitration clause at all. Now, of course, you cannot go to arbitration and to the courts to resolve the same dispute at the same time. So the district court in this case held that the subsequent rules superseded the previous user agreement, and therefore, the court refused to enforce the arbitration clause that was contained in that agreement. In the second case, the district court found that Coinbase's arbitration agreement was part of a more complex internal dispute resolution procedure that was both substantively and procedurally unconscionable. And this finding invalidated the arbitration agreement, and the court therefore refused to enforce that agreement as well. So Coinbase then appealed these two denials of its motions to compel arbitration to the Ninth Circuit. And it did so pursuant to Section 16 of the FAA, which grants a right to file an interlocutory appeal from a denial of a motion to compel arbitration by a district court. And once it filed those appeals, Coinbase also wanted to stay the trial proceedings pending the resolution of the arbitrability question by the Ninth Circuit. But both the district court and the Ninth Circuit refused those stay applications. And so those were the actual decisions refusing to stay the district court proceedings that Coinbase then ultimately appealed to the Supreme Court. So what is currently before the Supreme Court is a somewhat unusual procedural situation because typically a case is decided on its merits by the district court before it is appealed to the Circuit Court of Appeals. But as I mentioned, when a district court refuses to compel a dispute to arbitration, Section 16 of the FAA grants an explicit right to an interlocutory appeal from that refusal. So the question then becomes, what should happen to the underlying dispute? Can the district court continue to hear it while the Court of Appeals decides the arbitrability question? Or must the trial proceedings be stayed pending the resolution of the appeal? And the FAA is silent in this regard. And the circuit courts of appeals are actually split on this question, with the majority of circuits holding that an appeal from a district court's denial of arbitration does indeed divest the district court of jurisdiction to hear the underlying dispute, at least so long as the appeal is not frivolous. And so Coinbase submits that the Supreme Court should uphold this view of the majority of circuit courts. And so it's arguing that in this case, the trial proceedings should be automatically stayed and the district courts should not be allowed to order discovery or proceed with the trials while these appeals are pending before the Ninth Circuit on the question of whether the district courts have jurisdiction to hear this case to begin with. And so Coinbase is relying for this argument on a general rule that the Supreme Court set out in 1982 in a case called Griggs versus Provident Consumer Discount Company. And according to this rule, a notice of appeal does divest a district court of the power to proceed, but only with regard to the aspects of the case that are, quote, involved in the appeal, end quote. So Coinbase argues that the district court's findings that these disputes were not arbitrable, which it then appealed to the Ninth Circuit, are indeed involved in the language of Griggs, in the underlying disputes, because they essentially pertain to the district court's jurisdiction to hear those disputes. So therefore, according to Coinbase, a mandatory stay should be imposed under the Griggs rule. In contrast, the respondent customers are arguing that a mandatory stay should not be imposed, but rather that it should simply be left to the courts to decide whether a discretionary stay should be granted on a case-by-case basis. And they emphasize that Section 16 of the FAA, as I mentioned, is silent on the issue of a stay, and it only grants a right to an interlocutory appeal from a denial of a motion to compel arbitration. That's it. And the customers also argued that the Griggs rule does not apply because the question of whether a dispute is arbitrable, which is the question before the Ninth Circuit under Section 16, does not implicate the merits of the underlying disputes, so that the district courts can essentially proceed to hear those merits simultaneously with the appeal.
All right. Thank you for the breakdown of the background. So kind of fast forwarding to the oral argument itself, are there any kind of surprising things that happened there or any particularly interesting questions that you think would be good to touch on?
Yeah, so I thought the oral argument was actually very interesting because even though the question before the court is somewhat technical, the justices did seem to be split along ideological lines. And so the liberal wing of the court was sympathetic to the respondent customers. Justices Kagan, Sotomayor, and Jackson emphasized the right of these customers to proceed in litigation once arbitration has been denied by the district courts. These justices also seemed to prefer a textualist approach, and they were doubtful of Coinbase's argument that Congress's silence regarding a stay in Section 16 of the FAA shows its intention that the right to an interlocutory appeal, which is explicitly granted in that section, would necessarily be accompanied by a mandatory, as opposed to a discretionary, stay of the merits proceedings. And Justice Kagan also emphasized that the Griggs rule was a judge-made rule that should be interpreted narrowly. And she did not view the district courts and the Ninth Circuit in this case as, in her words, doing the exact same thing so as to trigger the Griggs rule at all. Instead, in her view, the arbitrability question and the merits of the disputes were entirely independent issues. And I also found it interesting that Justice Sotomayor raised Section 6 of the FAA. And so this is a very short section. It's literally one sentence that simply says that applications to the courts under the Act, unless the Act says otherwise, are to be made in the same manner provided by the usual federal procedural rules. And the court actually invoked Section 6 of the FAA last term in its unanimous decisions in Morgan versus Sundance and in Badgerow versus Walters. And so in Morgan, the court held that Section 6 prevents courts from devising special procedural rules, in that case, a waiver rule for arbitration cases. And in Badgerow, the court held that Section 6 prevents federal courts from looking through an application to confirm or to vacate an arbitration award in order to find federal question jurisdiction. So it was interesting to me anyway that Justice Sotomayor raised Section 6 again here and pointed out that under the federal procedural rules, an automatic stay pending appeal is the exception rather than the rule. And she also said that Section 6 made this, in her words, an easy case for her to decide. So I think we got a pretty good sense of where Justice Sotomayor is with regards to this question. Now, on the other hand, the conservative wing of the court, while a bit less active with questions during oral argument, appeared more sympathetic to Coinbase. For example, Justices Kavanaugh and Gorsuch and Barrett seemed willing to apply the Griggs rule as a default background rule, given that the FAA is silent on the issue of a stay pending appeal. And Justice Barrett also suggested that although the question of arbitrability is in some ways distinct from the underlying dispute, it's also intertwined with the merits proceedings before the district courts. So the Griggs rule could indeed be triggered. And I also found interesting the concerns that were expressed by Justices Alito and Kavanaugh. So Justice Alito was concerned that it would be practically impossible for a defendant to satisfy the irreparable harm requirement for a discretionary stay pending an appeal from the question of arbitrability. And this is because the main injury from refusing such a stay is likely to mostly be significant litigation costs. And these are not generally sufficient to show irreparable harm under the existing standards for a discretionary stay. And finally, Justice Kavanaugh was concerned that a defendant could be coerced into, in his words, massive settlements without a mandatory stay pending appeal from the question of arbitrability. And he actually engaged in a fairly intense back and forth with Justice Kagan on this point, which I thought was very interesting as well to listen to.
So given the seemingly the ideological vote here, do you think that the decision will come out in favor of Coinbase? What are your instincts about the decision?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? So I think Coinbase is a difficult case to predict. If the oral argument is any indication, I'd say it's likely to be a split decision, probably along ideological lines, at least between the justices that I mentioned. But it's more difficult to guess which way Justice Thomas and Chief Justice Roberts will vote because they were not as active during argument. So they may end up being swing votes in this case. But however, I do think that the outcome will ultimately depend on whether the majority adopts a strict textualist approach to the interpretation of the FAA or a more pragmatic approach that accounts for the purpose of the act and the realities of litigating arbitration issues. And if we look at the court's four FAA decisions from last term, other than the Viking River case, which was a very particular case that concerned California's Labor Code Private Attorney General Act, the other three decisions essentially adopted a textualist approach to the interpretation of the FAA. And two out of those three were unanimous decisions. So in addition to the Morgan and Badgerow decisions that I already mentioned earlier, the court in Southwest Airlines also refused to rely on what it called the FAA's pro-arbitration purpose when determining the scope of the exemption for certain workers that's contained in Section 1 of the Act. So the bottom line, I think, is that if the court continues with this textualist approach to the FAA that it seemed to favor last term, it may well refuse to rely on the Griggs rule to essentially read a stay of proceedings into Section 16. But again, judging by the oral argument anyway, there does not appear to really be a consensus among the justices in this regard. So I do anticipate a split decision. That's my best guess.
And in terms of implications going forward after the case is decided, do you think there's any kind of broader implications or kind of fallout from this case moving forward?
Yeah, so I think this case or this decision will have important implications for the ability of parties to vindicate their right to appeal from a refusal to compel arbitration under Section 16 of the FAA. If the Supreme Court refuses to impose a mandatory stay of proceedings while an appeal is pending on the arbitrability question, this may very well defeat the entire purpose of Section 16, because this section clearly evidences a legislative preference for enforcing arbitration agreements by allowing an appeal from an order denying arbitration, but not from an order compelling arbitration. So if the court does not find that a mandatory stay is required when that interlocutory appeal is filed, then a party who appeals from a refusal to compel arbitration could easily find itself litigating a dispute that the Court of Appeals may later find should have been arbitrated all along. Now, at the same time, having said all that, there could also be cases where an automatic stay would prejudice the interests of the plaintiffs. And I think the crypto context that we see in the Coinbase case is one example of where that might happen. Now, the fact that this case arose in this crypto context did not really seem to be top of mind for the justices during oral argument, but counsel for the customers during oral argument did point to potentially serious implications arising from the state of the crypto market and the concern that a defendant, a crypto exchange, might essentially disappear while the district court litigation is stayed and an appeal is pending from the denial of a motion to compel arbitration.
That is a good point. That's very interesting, actually, with the nature of some of these companies. But
yeah, precisely.
All right. Well, I think that kind of gets us towards the end of our episode, unless you think there's anything else worth covering as a last note.
So I guess I would just note that it's interesting that the FAA continues to feature quite prominently on the Supreme Court's docket. And as I mentioned last term, the court decided four FAA cases, as well as a case involving international arbitration. And this term, in addition to Coinbase, the court granted cert in a case that involves arbitration, although more indirectly. The court also denied cert in four other FAA cases, and I believe one petition is still pending. So I think we've seen in recent years quite a few FAA cases reach the court in part because the act really does not address many substantive and procedural issues that arise in arbitration and in litigation about arbitration. And I think we're likely to continue seeing a steady stream of cert petitions in FAA cases as arbitration-related questions become more and more complex. And for instance, I think the Coinbase case indicates that we're likely to see more arbitration-related cases arise in the crypto context in particular, because many cryptocurrencies and crypto exchanges do include arbitration clauses in their terms of use. So I think it's really only, and this is what I'm going to leave you with, it's really only a matter of time until disputes arise and end up in court in connection with arbitration-related issues in the crypto context.
All right. So that will be hopefully the topic of many future SCOTUS Cast episodes. So we'll cross our fingers and hope for those down the line. And all right. So, Dr. Michelle, thank you very much for joining us today and breaking down Coinbase.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. SCOTUS Cast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.